What, did you hear that Devin Booker had a plus minus of like 37 last night? He had 48 points and 11 assists and 10 of 10 from the free throw line. And if you haven't got the message, your shooting percentages are incredibly exclusive for a player of his usage rating. I'll continue conversating while the Suns are escalating. One day they'll be jumping on that podium and celebrating. So the panel guys, they love to analyze the Suns. Yeah, the panel guys, they love to analyze the Suns.
My name's Tim Tompkins. We have Dave King as well as Greg Esposito on this episode. So, starting this one off with something a little bit light, Mikal Bridges looking at his Basketball Reference nicknames, and I think that they could use a little bit of a revamp. So these are the ones that are listed on Basketball Reference for our beloved rookie Mikal Bridges. The nicknames include Noodles,
Noodles,
Inspector No. Go Go Gadget,
Holy No. Crap,
String Bean.
No, God.
Do they just make some of these up?
Brittle.
Brittle?
Yeah. What?
That's been Devin Booker the last two seasons.
Yeah, that's right. Brittle Booker.
And a Praying Mantis.
I don't mind that one, but how about Bridges Over Troubled Waters?
Oh, God. That's just awful.
It is. It's very bad.
That's worse than Brittle. Are you serious? Those are his nicknames?
Yeah. So I think that we need to come up with something else. I came up with one, and I think that we should call him Hands.
Oh, God.
No, the reason for it is because when you have a player that is constantly getting steals, constantly getting deflections, constantly getting blocks, especially somebody that's not a big that's doing those types of things, a lot of the times in pickup games, you call them Hands, and that becomes like their nicknames because they have really great hands. So I thought for Mikal Bridges, Hands might be one option.
How about the Mikal Man, because he delivers on the defensive end?
Oh, I like that one, actually.
I don't get it. I'm not a nickname guy, though.
What isn't there to get?
I don't get how great it is what I mean.
Oh, I got you.
I just don't get how great it is. I mean, I'm not against just calling him Gadget, Inspector Gadget. That's not bad.
What does it mean, though?
Inspector Gadget is way too long.
Because Inspector Gadget had the arms that went everywhere, and
I get it. Yeah, I like Gadget. Gadget's fine. The thing is with me,
Gumby.
If you're going to have a nickname, it should be shorter than the full name. Otherwise, just say the full name. So, Go Go Inspector Gadget is way too long.
He does have a 7'1 wingspan, which is coming very handy.
He does have long arms, and they do look, I guess if there wasn't already a spider out there, that'd be a good one. Spider would be good.
Spider Bridges.
Mickey Long Legs. No, that doesn't sound right.
Mickey Long
Growth
Arms.
Chart.
Growth chart.
So maybe we can call on our listeners.
That's why there aren't any better ones. On
we need some better ones. Well, we don't. He does. So, go ahead, hit us up on Twitter. If you're watching on YouTube right now, leave them in the comments below.
What was the name of the bad guy in the Spider-Man movie?
Doc Ock.
Doc Ock. No, that doesn't fit either. Nick Ock. No. All right, never mind. Go ahead. Next topic.
So I thought that this was a joke, and I've thought it was a joke for like the last month. I'm like, there's no way that this is real. This is some sort of like people playing around with Photoshop on the internet and, just making fun of the team, and I get it. It turns out it's not. Northern Arizona Suns becoming the NAZ Rodeo Clowns. And I got to tell you, man, these guys, they're trying to get into the league. They're working really hard. Don't do this to them.
Well, and they're already playing for an organization that gets called clowns all the time. So
yeah,
don't dress them up like them. Like, just give them a break.
Just call them the Bulls or something. I mean, if you're gonna do the rodeo theme, because that's what they were going for. It's the rodeo theme. That's the history of that area. Apparently, is proud of their rodeo history. But don't be the clown. We're already clowns.
be the Bull Riders or something, you know, like yeah. something cool. Like call them the Riders, and it's a Bull Rider thing or something. It's something. Don't call them the Clowns.
Yeah.
I know the that's uniforms like the make that's it like worse.
Court jester. If you want to be royal, oh, let's call us the Court Jesters. No, you call yourselves the Kings.
Heck, even the Princes. I'll take any. The Paupers, even. Like, but why? Seriously, the uniforms too.
I mean, I bet even Prescott is disappointed in rodeo clowns.
But no, Prescott's distancing itself from Prescott Valley right now. They're going, no, we're two different places. We're not. Prescott Valley is its own thing right now. Nope.
We always knew Prescott Valley sucked. Yeah.
yeah. What the hell is this? I mean, the uniforms make it worse. And I'm a uniform guy, and they're so bad that I want one just because of how awful they are, because nobody will believe it ever happened 20 years from now.
Are they bad, or are they actually kind of amazing? Like they're,
no, they are god awful. They're going
to
put.
You would wear them to like a Halloween.
No, I wouldn't. I would never put that on my body for anything. And the poor guys, like to your point, a George King who's a rookie who's just trying to get in the league has to dress like an asshole right now. All right, pardon my language, but he's got to go out there and do his profession in that outfit. All right.
There has been some crazy outfits in the G League over the last couple of years. I think teams are trying to do. A little bit of what AAA baseball did several years ago.
I was going to say Jacksonville changing their AAA baseball team to, they changed it from the Suns actually into the Jumbo Shrimp. And there was this huge like uproar, but people really like the name the Jumbo Shrimp. Now it's really taken on, but I don't think the Rodeo Clowns has that same appeal.
No, no. See, and you guys can see, I mean, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm wearing like a Chandler Diamondbacks hat. It's an old fall league baseball team, and I collect a bunch of those random minor league hats. I got a Bacon hat. It was a team that changed their name to the Bacon for the Fighting Bacon for a game. I buy a bunch of those random minor league hats.
They went on a sizzling hot streak.
They did, yes. No, but like the Fresno Grizzlies every Tuesday become the Fresno Tacos. Like there's cool things you can do.
Taco Tuesday, yeah.
The Rodeo Clowns are not one of those cool things. The coolest
especially
thing,
the logo. No, the logo makes it even more of a joke than just Rodeo Clowns in the first place.
But
I mean, you could be a Rodeo Clown that's like the bad guy from It. You know, you could be a scary Rodeo Clown that everyone's afraid of. That is a big thing around the country right now, or it was a year ago anyway. So you could have done that. But no, this is like the goofy Rodeo Clown that just gets run over all the time.
Did you see that the only thing that was good that came out of this and I'm going to curse for the second time on this show, but it's because of on Reddit, somebody took that logo, put Sarver's face on the clown and changed it to the Ass Clowns. All right. That was kind of funny. That was kind of funny, but that's even that was a little too much. All right. Like this is like somebody asking one of us to go into our profession dressed like a Hooters waitress. It's just like you're never going to get respect again. Okay.
Oh my God. I would do that. I can't.
Yeah, it's always
sent home.
So work in government.
Can we talk about Hooters just briefly? I've always Hooters? Yeah, I've always wondered. I'm like, why did people go
Suns
there?
Fans, you're welcome. We're finally talking about Hooters.
Why do people go there? There's better places for wings. Like, what do you? Is
are
there
you,
really an appeal?
Really, are you asking why they go there? There's two reasons, and they're already on display most of the time.
Then,
when you guys
then you
go
can
in
go
there,
to
right?
a strip club for lunch if that's what you want to see. But who wants to stare at like Hooter girls? They most of the time they're like 17, 18 years old. They probably shouldn't be doing that, honestly. And it's not like their outfits aren't attractive. I've always found it a weird place to go.
Okay, well,
it is a weird, uncomfortable place to go, yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Very much so. Like, very, very much so. But we're not the creepy guys that they're playing up.
No, I see families eating there.
Well, that's because there's a creepy dad that wants to
who convinces
there has never, ever been a family in there that didn't have a dad.
Right.
With it's them. Never like, you don't see the mom and kids going to Hooters. For,
how
you know,
does he even convince his wife to say okay to that? That's the part I don't understand. I just, but all of it is so strange.
Because he, just like the old Playboy thing, reads it for the articles, you know, he convinced his wife that he just loves the wings and he loves the atmosphere and all this and the TVs and it's closest to the house. I mean, that's the only way wives and kids go to this place.
Yes, I really, sweetheart, I really love a restaurant that feels like the inside of an old barn and really, really bad wings. You know, little Timmy loves the wings over at Hooters. We should all go. Gather the family up. Timmy's been demanding the wings from Hooters. We all should go as a family. Like, no, there's, you know, dad's a creeper. That's why. And if, I apologize to anybody listening to this that goes to Hooters on the regular. We do love you. Or if Hooters wants to advertise here, I'll read ads for anybody. You can tell on the show.
My great Hooter experiences I did between marriages 15 years ago. I started going to Hooters with some friends of mine and all that. So I had a good memory of it. I got remarried, and one time we went on a trip, and I said, you know what? Let's just go into this Hooters. We were in Vegas, and there was a Hooters hotel and all that. And I'm like, let's go. The wings really are good, honey. The wings are good. The wings were terrible. And the waitresses were terrible. And this was Vegas. I'm like, God, come on. Uh-huh. Put your best foot forward.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, I digress. So
there's a shortage of attractive women in Vegas. I don't know. Tim, please cut this out of the actual podcast.
No, I'm getting this. I'm getting this back on track right now. So now that you are back and we are talking about the Suns, we do want to thank a listener for becoming a supporter of the show. Joseph Shook actually hits us up on Twitter a lot.
Joe Shook.
So, hey, thanks, man. We appreciate that. If you do want to become a supporter of the show, we really do appreciate you. Just open up the show notes while you're listening to the podcast right now or watching on YouTube. It's in the comments below. Hit the Become a Supporter button for 99 cents a month. It really does help us out, and we appreciate it.
You know what? We also appreciate people who just want to mail us cash. So we have a fan who was really awesome. He said he doesn't like third-party credit card services. So he actually emailed us and asked if he could just mail us a small pile of cash. And we appreciate that. Greg immediately put his address in the email thread.
Which I'm regretting now. You never know who these people could be.
I love this, though. Vince, love you. Love you, love you as a fan. And his comment is there. Let's see. I know things are getting rough when Espo is spokespersoning for some questionable outlets. But you know what? Everybody that comes up as a sponsor and that we push, those are really good products. So, but I do really appreciate anybody who wants to mail us cash.
No, hold on. I have to say 100%. I have no idea who the sponsor is on the show. Greg recorded it, so like I'm not.
It's Baboon.
Oh, you're not gonna take any ownership.
It's no. BaboonToTheMoon.com. They're a bag place. They do fantastic bags, I'm sure. I don't own one, but you know, I'll read anything. I'm Ron Burgundy. All right, if you put it in there, I will read it. Right. I am a bag man. I love bags.
Just don't put the question mark.
Let's be clear on the sponsorships. The company that hosts the show sends us those. The companies do not send us products. We do not try them out. I'm not endorsing them.
Well, if we got free swag from these companies, then we'd be more likely to try them out.
Right. We didn't, so we're not endorsing them whatsoever.
But for the cost of those Hooters wings that you're going to go buy tonight, you can
get your
the show.
Baboon to the Moon bag.
No, you can sponsor the show. Forget Baboon to the Moon. Yeah. I just wanted you to sponsor the show.
Right. For like $1 a month, we really appreciate it. Just open up those show notes and hit the Become a Sponsor button. So this is something
Or just throw your leftover ones from the last Hooters night and put them in an envelope and mail them to us.
I feel like I'm going to be laundering drug money now that people are just mailing me cash in envelopes.
Unmarked bills, please.
Unmarked $5 bills coming your way.
This thing has gone so off the rails today.
I know. I'm ready to get back on. You guys ready?
Yes, please.
Okay, so it is something that has kind of been brewing, I think, all season long, especially on Suns Twitter, but really anywhere where Suns fans are talking, is the free throw disparity that the Suns are getting. So I want to break this down a little bit. And the Suns are aware of this too, because they actually contacted the league office regarding this free throw disparity. So right now, the Suns' opponents are averaging 7.5 more attempts per game than the Suns. The Suns are fouling 30th at 24 fouls per game, 30th in the league. The Suns are sending opponents to the line on 24% of their shooting possessions. The Suns overall in the entire season have shot 943 free throw attempts compared to opponents shooting 1,263 free throw attempts. So far, the Suns, as of the time of recording this episode, have played 46 games, and they have only shot more free throws than their opponents in 7 out of those 46 games.
This is simple. It's the old phrase, respect is earned and not given. And this team has been bad for so long with a group of young guys that isn't known around the league, that is simply it. They're not going to get the benefit of a call. And we've known this about the NBA for decades, that superstars get calls, guys that are respected around the league get calls and teams. It's not a new thing. So, like, there's no shock here that the Suns just don't get the respect. And if it's a 50-50 call, it's just not going to go their way right now.
I am a little bit flummoxed, I guess the word is, on how few foul calls TJ Warren gets. And he's in his fifth year. So I'm not sure if it's just a youth thing. But I will tell you that on committing fouls, the Suns have committed the foul at least 95% of the time they get called for them. The Suns, they are very handsy, if we're going to call a guy hands on the team. They are very handsy. They do get they do go for steals a lot, and they do commit fouls. And then you've got DeAndre Ayton. When he does contest, he's not entirely great at keeping his arms up and stuff. So I really think that on the defensive end, giving up the 27.5 free throws a game, that's the Suns doing it to themselves almost all the time. Getting the foul calls on the other end, yeah, that does seem like they're not getting as many calls as we would like them to get if the calls are going to be going against him on the other end. So for sure, TJ Warren gets way too few calls. Devin Booker gets a couple of few too calls. DeAndre Ayton doesn't even try for him. That's part of it, is DeAndre Ayton doesn't even know how to use his body to draw a foul while he's finishing. And that'll get better. But TJ Warren really is the one that stands out to me who doesn't get enough calls.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily him because yes, he's his fifth year. He has kind of proved himself, but the Suns have been so bad in those 5 years that I think that weighs into it too. I mean, these refs are human. There's going to be a bias naturally, just because there's a natural human bias in everything, whether people try to say there isn't or not. So I think that's definitely part of it. And the other part to your DeAndre Ayton point is when you don't get the guy the ball in the second half, I mean, the second half is when a lot of big guys, and in particular the fourth quarter too, get a lot of those fouls, when guys draw a lot of those fouls, when guys are more tired, those kind of things. And the team just seems to not get DeAndre Ayton the ball in the second half of games, no matter how well the first half has gone.
Speaking of the Suns fouling, as far as like fouling percentage goes, there are only 3 players on the Suns this season that are in the top 50 percentile for their position in terms of not fouling as often as they should. Those 3 players include Trevor Ariza, who only fouled on 2% of the possessions. Ryan Anderson fouling on 3.7%. That puts him in the 63 percentile. And DeAndre Ayton fouling 3.6%, which puts him in the 66th percentile.
Wait, are you saying getting fouled?
Or no. At fouling the opponent. So
okay.
As far as the entire team is in the bottom 50 percentile at fouling. So to Dave's point, they're being really handsy. Kind of. So this is the way I broke it down, right? So, and I realize that it's not pickup ball, but in pickup ball, it comes a time in which a certain guy that we're playing with is just fouling on every single possession. And so every single possession, players are calling fouls, right? And it gets really fucking annoying. So there's a point to where you're like, well, stop calling fouls, but also you just have to play better defense.
Stop committing fouls, right? Yeah.
Well, and the guys you named on that list of that didn't really foul were 2 guys who weren't really trying and Ayton who's afraid to.
Like, right. So you have two vets, basically. So to your guys' points, have the reputation. And also Ryan Anderson, small sample size. He didn't defend anybody, so I take that out. But and then to your point, Espo.
Yeah, it's hard to commit a foul if you don't get close to the other guy.
Right. And then to your point, Espo, DeAndre Ayton being so scared of committing a foul that he doesn't.
We need to talk about DeAndre Ayton a little bit on just overall. DeAndre Ayton being scared of committing fouls. I mean, that's a good way to, that is an accurate way to put it, Tim, for sure. I don't think like he's like afraid, like he shakes or anything like that. I think he just tells himself it's my job either. Not to get in foul trouble. So, I mean, he's not afraid of the opponent. He just doesn't want to be in foul trouble in the second half. That's ingrained in his DNA. But the problem is that he doesn't commit enough fouls to establish himself in the paint, for sure. He doesn't commit the big foul when he needs to. He's always got fouls in his back pocket, for sure, that he could be using. And that's what's frustrating a lot of fans and myself as well, for sure, absolutely. But I think he's already told himself before the tip that he is just not going to collect fouls because he doesn't want to be in foul trouble. And he was always told by his coaches, I'm sure, especially Sean Miller down at U of A, look, man, you cannot be the guy I have to put on the bench in the second half. I need you. So he's got that in his head. And it's going to take him deciding which fouls he can give and which ones he can't. And I guarantee you that about a year or two or three from now, we'll hear him actually give us a very dispassionate explanation as to exactly how he commits fouls now and when he commits fouls, because he'll have premeditated everything he does. That's just the way he is as a player.
There was an Eli Okobo one that really pissed me off the other day. I think it was against the Raptors. Eli Okobo was defending a 2-on-1 break. And I don't remember who the two players were for the Raptors, but he was the only one defending it because why would anybody else on the Suns get back in transition D? And anyway,
yeah, exactly.
He was right under the basket, and basically they scored on him. And I was just thinking, man, Eli Okobo, you play like 15 minutes a game, hard foul. You know, who cares? You have fouls to use, hard foul right
there.
Well,
and then the other thing is if you're going to foul on a fast break, if you're going to foul in a broken play situation where they're scoring quick, at least stop them from scoring. So either don't commit the foul at all, like they probably all think, oh, this guy's going to score no matter what because he got past me. Or if you do commit the foul, go for the ball and then make sure that you commit enough of a foul that they don't get 3 points out of it instead of two.
Right, right. Send them to the damn line. No, just...
But only for two shots, not one.
Right, I agree. Coming up on this break, we are going to talk about whether or not Igor Kokoschkov should have taken a tech over Josh Jackson in the Raptors game. What we thought about the Josh Jackson tech in general. Is Devin Booker the next Carmelo Anthony? And should the Suns start Kelly Oubre? We'll be back.
The Sun Solar Panel podcast, now available on Spotify. Just search Sun Solar Panel. Now, back to three awkward guys talking about the Suns.
So in the Raptors game, which I have to say was actually a really amazing game, and there's so much to take away from it, but one of the things that stood out to us as well as all over the internet was Josh Jackson, and I appreciated this Josh Jackson tech. You know, they had basically followed a bunch of pretty egregious non-calls from the officials that the Suns were not getting, and I know that's been a point of emphasis on this episode. Josh Jackson just straight up pushed a guy underneath the basket. I didn't like how he got that or the way he executed that foul. But nonetheless, I appreciated that he was standing up for his boys. He ended up getting a tech and a flagrant, being kicked out of the game, expelled from the game or whatever. A lot of people are wondering if Igor should have gotten that tech so that Josh Jackson did not.
Is Igor the kind of guy that's ever going to, I mean, he just doesn't seem like he's going to peak enough emotion on the radar to get that technical from the ref. Like, I don't know, Dave, you've been around him more, but you know, in my experience with him back when he was here in his first stint, not exactly like the fieriest guy to get a technical, I don't think.
Igor is not the fieriest guy. That's for sure. Igor would rather. Okay. So Igor used to be a player. He was a top prospect. He would have been really, really good, but he had an accident that, rendered him unable to continue playing competitive professional basketball. And so that's when he became a coach. That's why he's still so young and has 19 years of coaching. And he's never been the head guy other than national teams overseas. And so he's not used to being the one, if someone's going to get a tech, that the coach is the one who gets, the head coach is the one who gets a tech. Mm-hmm. Worst thing you can do is have an assistant coach grab a tech on something like that. So this is new to him. But having said that, it's ingrained in him. We've talked about it a little bit. It's ingrained in him not to blame the refs for what you're doing. The way to win games is to outscore the opponent.
Welcome back, Captain Obvious.
Yes, I am.
The way to win games is to play better basketball than the other team. And you can't waste your time complaining to the refs about something that happened. You just got to do it better next time. We spent 5 minutes talking about how handsy the guys are and that they do commit fouls almost every time. You just want it to be even. And that's the big thing that happened in that game on Thursday night with the Raptors, is that it wasn't, for a 3-minute stretch there, it wasn't even. So somebody had to lay down the law with the refs. Well, you know what? There's no law to lay down with the refs. First of all, the refs don't change their minds mid-game just because you said something to them, or every player would get up in their face. While I do respect Josh Jackson for doing that, I absolutely respect him. Probably don't do it to the point where you give the other team 7 points and get yourself ejected. It's okay to get a tech for complaining. It's not okay to get yourself thrown out and literally give the other team 7 points. They scored on the foul, so the guy got his and one. Then there was a flagrant free throw. Then there's a possession where they made a three. So 7 points in one possession is not ideal. And that's all Igor's saying. It's like, what does it get you? It gets you more points for the other team on the scoreboard, because every time you get a tech called against you, you're giving the other team a point. So if it's a tight game, which it was, 88-87 at that time when Josh Jackson committed that tech, all of a sudden it was 95-87, and the Suns were struggling to get back, and then they ended up not being able to close out the game because they had to outscore the other team by 7 more than they would have otherwise before Josh Jackson's play. So all Igor is saying is, look, it doesn't really get you anywhere. Yeah, I can do it for show. I can get in the ref's face just for show, and maybe my guys will appreciate it, maybe fans will appreciate it, maybe media will appreciate it, but it doesn't really get us anywhere on the court. That's what Igor's base belief is. And so he's never going to be the guy who draws techs unless he's told himself, I need to do this for show.
Well, and it never helped Hornacek. I mean, you were there for those games. I sat like 10 feet from Jeff Hornacek when he'd flip out, about something that was going on. And it didn't help him with the team because, I mean, it didn't earn him respect with those guys, and it never helped him really in the win-loss column. And to your point, you can complain to a ref all you want, but I don't ever believe that, oh, because I got that technical and I complained about that, it shifted the way the refs were calling the game. No, it probably makes it more likely they're going to call stuff against your team because you're being irrational about it. Yeah, right. You're upsetting them at that point. So I struggle with that. And to your point, that 7-point swing was all the Raptors needed. I mean, they win that game by 2 points on a last second shot. And without that swing, you're not working as tough to get back
shot,
in.
What was the likelihood of him making that last second shot? Seriously, I loved the shot. It looked beautiful. Pascal Siakam, wonderful job. But you know what? That's a running lefty. He's a right-handed player, by the way. Running lefty, kiss off the top of the glass into the basket at full speed, going against, away from the basket, and almost being behind the basket when you let it go. That was pretty good defense on Ayton's part. Pretty good recovery to get to the other side of the paint from where his man was standing in the corner. And it just was a beautiful play. So all hats off to Pascal Siakam. But, man, I think that was probably like a 2% shot.
Well, and here's my weekly DeAndre Ayton rant. How are people complaining that that was his fault? You could not have contested that final shot any better unless you blocked it or fouled him, and you don't foul in that situation. And if you look, the possession before that the Raptors had, Ayton contested that three-pointer on a switch that forced that shot to not go in too. So he had back-to-back defensive efforts that were quality, and I don't get the complaining about it. I'm so sick of this. This guy cannot win online with people, and there's an obvious reason. He who shall not be named, who was drafted third overall, is the reason behind that, and I'm just sick of it. And other shows, other guys that do podcasts on this team, I don't want to hear your damn love letter for that who shall not be named, all right? I'm so sick of it. If you want that, go do a Dallas Mavericks podcast. I'm sick of this. Look at DeAndre Ayton and what he's doing.
Let's just bring it back to the the basics are that rookies don't win a lot of games. I know people are saying that Luka Doncic has won.
Hey, don't name him.
I'll say it. he's won a lot of games for Dallas, but Dallas actually has lost a lot recently, and they're almost out of their playoff picture. In fact, everyone's looking more toward the draft than the playoffs for them now. Memphis Grizzlies started out really well, but now they've lost 14 of 17 games, even though they've got the guy that people thought should have been taken second behind Doncic. And
Jaren Jackson is really good.
What's that?
He is really good. He's going to be a great
player.
He's
denying that any of these guys are really good.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, Tim, thanks for jumping back in. I'm not saying he's not good. What I'm saying is he's not going to – these rookies, no rookies are leading you to wins by themselves. It's the players around them that leads you to wins that are more veterans in the league. So they're all good. They're all very good players. Marvin Bagley's a good player too, but he's not going to be the one that leads the Kings to the wins. You've got to have a little bit more veteran. So it's really more on Devin Booker than it is on DeAndre Ayton to win games.
Mm. Well, and his defensive effort has gotten better. That was the big knock early on. And then he has back-to-back quality defensive effort plays, and yet they're still acting like that final play DeAndre Ayton was supposed to grow a third arm and block a circus shot from the at the end there. The kid can't win.
At the very beginning of that game, Kevin Ray called him, what did he call him? He called him Pascal Siakam. See a cam. Yeah. I'm like, man, have you not watched a Raptors game this year? And the thing is, it's not like Pascal Siakam is an obscure player. He's been killing it this year. Pascal Siakam, his growth is what I really hope that we see out of Mikal Bridges. That same amount of growth year over year, and I think the Suns will be great. Also, when we look back at this last year's draft class, I think it's going to be one of the most amazing draft classes that the Suns have ever had.
That the league has seen. Right, exactly. Yeah. It was a really, really good draft of players for sure.
Suns nailed it, man.
Isn't Siakam what Shaq used to yell on the NBA on TNT? Isn't Siakam? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
No, he did. There was something like that he used to yell. All right.
So
and careening off the rails again. Sorry.
Devin Booker came back from injury. And it was against the Pacers was his first game back after injury this time of the many times. And Suns Twitter just started exploding because Dave actually wrote this really great piece that Devin Booker needs to fit into the identity of the team and not take the game over, yada, yada, yada. Go check that out on Bright Side of the Sun. But then Devin Booker just had probably his worst game of the season, not just offensively, but defensively. He didn't look comfortable. He looked out of sync. And Suns fans were calling for him to be traded. It was one of the dumbest things I've seen on the internet in a while. But a question started to come up, and that is Devin Booker the next Carmelo Anthony? Is he a great offensive player that will never carry your team to meaningful wins?
How do you even judge that? He's playing with absolutely no point guard right now. He's played with rosters that have been a joke his entire career. We have no clue what Devin Booker is going to be because we haven't seen him in a situation where he could actually win. Like, what more do you want him to do? Like, he can't put this entire team on his back and score 112 points a game to win games for you. Like, I don't think we know what Devin Booker can do in this league yet because we haven't seen him in an environment where he can win.
I think we'd be lucky, personally, I think we'd be lucky for him to be Carmelo Anthony in his prime. I wouldn't mind that because those Denver teams made it to conference finals with Carmelo Anthony. I think it's about the players around him. It's not necessarily the player Devin Booker. Yeah, he himself is not going to lead a team to a championship without the right team around him. But that's the case for just about everybody. Remember James Harden? There was a year where it was just James and nobody else, and they went 41-41.
Right, but we're talking about
every
a team that's
every
like...
young star, if nobody's around him, is going to struggle.
Look at the Chicago Bulls in the late 80s. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't win them titles till he got running mates.
Did he get them to the playoffs?
Yes.
My point is, there comes a time.
But they had 30. They had 30 something win seasons when he took them into the playoffs. If you look at their record.
Okay. Well, I think Suns fans would actually welcome a 30 something win season. I love Devin Booker. I'm playing devil's advocate, but there is a certain part of me that does think that when you are a max player, that needs to translate into wins, and we're getting into the part of Devin Booker's career where his talents need to start translating into wins.
I agree with that, but totally. That contract totally. Kicks in next year, so that's when I'm going to – we'll talk next year, and hopefully they have a point guard by then, all right?
Look, fans are already nitpicking on Devin Booker, just like they're going to nitpick on any player whose team loses tons of games, so it's okay. Yes, Devin Booker needs to – there are things that Devin Booker needs to do better, for sure, to contribute to a winning team around him. He's got to be more consistent on defense, and he's got to be more trusting of his teammates, which is what I wrote last week on Brightside. It can't be the Devin Booker show. It can't just be the Devin Booker. He needs to be able to trust people. One of the great things about LeBron James is the criticism that he got in his first several years in the league when he was playing with inferior teams but still was running through the playoffs with them. Was that he would overtrust them in clutch times because all the attention he would get on offense, his other teammates would be open. And so why not give them a wide open shot to win the game or hit the clutch shot? And they either made him or they didn't. Devin is a little bit afraid of that right now. He'll get his 7-8 assists in the first 3.5 quarters, and then it's all Devin all the time after that. So he's got to trust better. But his team also has to step up to prove that he can trust them. And that is that delicate balance, and the Suns have to find that.
Well, and I'd like for him to learn on nights like that Pacers game where he just doesn't have it. Feed the beast, feed DeAndre Ayton, give him the ball, like figure out ways to get him involved.
That's an ongoing thing. On one hand, no rookie is almost no rookies in history, not none, but almost no rookies in history have been 20 plus point per game big men. They generally, it's just a thing that big men don't get the ball a ton in their rookie year because they don't know exactly how to manage the game, and they're relying on somebody else to get them the ball. Ayton is one of the most productive big men centers in history, and yet we're killing ourselves over the fact that he got zero field goal attempts in the second half on Thursday night against Toronto when he was 6 of 8 in the first half. We love he's obviously good at scoring. So why wouldn't you get him the ball? There's a lot of factors in that. Some of that's Ayton's fault. Some of that is the team's fault. Some of that's the scheme's fault. I totally agree. Everyone realizes that DeAndre Ayton is one of your best chances to score. And why would Devin Booker suddenly stop trying to find him in the third and fourth quarters? We don't know. That's a mystery for sure.
Well, look, I'm okay in it in a game where Devin Booker's on, and he was in that Toronto game. But in a game like the Pacers where you just don't have it, that's why you have a running mate. So you can rely on a secondary guy like an Ayton to help you get it going. And I think that's a maturity thing. I don't think that's a selfish thing. I don't think that's anything other than the fact that you're putting a guy who isn't usually a primary ball handler into that position to have to be that guy. And there's a learning curve to that as well. But I think it's too early to tell if Devin Booker can help his team win long term or not. And also, anybody that after that game was like, well, Devin Booker just doesn't fit this team and it's time to consider moving him, vastly overreacts to things. I'm just going to say
Oh, it's definitely a vast overreaction to trade him at this point. He does have to develop. He does have to change just a little bit from I'll do everything Booker to I'll share a lot more Booker. But you've got to also get him better players so he can be a catch and shoot guy as well sometimes and get more used to being off the ball because his team's doing well without him handling the ball. So that's all got to happen for sure, and he's got to develop. I think it's interesting that the Suns are extremely predictable on the scouting chart. Devin Booker, trap him outside the three-point line, and if he gets past you, then allow him that mid-range because it's only a 2, not a 3. DeAndre Ayton, if they're going to feed him, it's going to be a lob over top, so slide one of your weak side guys out under the basket and try to make it hard for him to catch. Otherwise, you know, if he gets it in front of him in the post on a bounce pass, then half the time he's going to pass it out from there anyway if he's more than 6 feet from the basket. And then the other guys, they're going to put their heads down and drive to the basket. They're not going to dump it off for an easy finish. So it's pretty easy to defend, to know what the Suns are going to do on just about every play. What the Suns have to do, the players have to do, and the coaches as well, is come up with wrinkles that are successful so the other team doesn't know what Ayton's going to do every time, doesn't know what Booker's going to do every time, and doesn't know what Oubre, Jackson, and TJ Warren are going to do every time. We can see it. They know it too.
If you... Oh, actually, before I forget, you, Dave, because I'm looking at you on Skype, you, Greg, you're there, although I can't see you, and myself are going to be at the Suns' home game on Tuesday against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So if anyone wants to meet up with us and say hello during the game or even slightly before the game, just hit us up on Twitter, send us a message, and we'll come say hi.
Yeah, let's meet. Let's just plan to meet at a place right by the stadium.
If any fans do want to meet up with us, Suns fans, you want to grab a drink, you want to grab a beverage before the game, we're going to meet at Marley's. At what time is the game? Like 7? So I guess 5:30?
Yeah, so we'll meet at 6.
6? Okay. Well, I'll be there at like 5:30. Come see.
I'll be there whenever I can get there from the Far East Valley where I work. So, you know, I'll see you sometime around 9:30 at night. So
Tim will be there first, Dave will be there second, and Greg will be there right before game time. We get it.
Very, very much like usually how we show up to this podcast.
So. Yep. Hey, so Kelly Oubre has been really good, and a lot of Suns fans are calling for him to start. A lot of Suns fans are saying he should start over TJ Warren. Personally, I think that's one of the dumbest things I've heard in a while, just because you need a guy on the... You need a guy on the court that's big enough to play power forward, so you cannot just have Devin Booker and Kelly Oubre and Mikal Bridges out there. If it were me, I would have Kelly Oubre start over Mikal Bridges if I was going to change that around in the starting lineup. Do you guys think that Kelly Oubre should be starting? And if he is, who would you take out of, or who would you replace in the lineup?
I really wish we could say you don't mess with success, but I guess you can mess with the starting lineup. I'd probably go Bridges. I mean... it's been nice to have Bridges in the lineup, but I think you can get the same kind of defensive production, maybe not quite as well from Kelly Oubre, but you're going to get a little bit more offense. And I think you might see Mikal Bridges' offense blossom a little bit with that second unit, because he might get the ability to take more shots when he's not playing constantly with DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker around him.
Yeah, I'm going to be that guy that will remind everyone what I wrote 4 years ago. I always said that TJ Warren and Devin Booker are not a great pairing in the starting lineup, because they both neither plays defense, neither can really contribute enough rebounding or anything like that to be providing anything but the scoring. So I would actually put Oubre in the lineup in place of TJ Warren and have Warren be the first guy off the bench and win Sixth Man of the Year. Well, consideration, because there's not enough time left in the year for him to get it.
Who would play power forward?
That's what I would do, is I would have TJ coming off the bench, and I would have Kelly Oubre in the starting lineup with Mikal Bridges, with the three rookies and Devin Booker.
I mean, I guess you get a look at it. It's going to be an imperfect situation, however you do it. And we all know you need a power forward in this offseason, right? An actual power forward. So you're not
a little bit thicker guy who can actually rebound enough to help the Suns. Because since TJ Warren joined the starting lineup, the Suns are worse in the league at rebounding, and because they're only getting it from DeAndre Ayton and nobody else. These guys, not only are they smaller, but they're also just not good rebounders. I mean, even PJ Tucker was a much better rebounder. Heck, even Eric Bledsoe was a better rebounder than these guys. So you've got to get a little bit more rebounding out there. I'm not saying you need the traditional 6'10 power forward like a Markieff Morris type. It needs to be a more mobile guy. As this team is developing, I'm more and more interested in what's Orlando want to give up Aaron Gordon for? That kind of guy is the kind of guy who would really work, a really rangy mobile dude who is big enough to do some rebounding, big enough to defend some power forwards in the paint, and yet can also run and move and stretch the floor and all that stuff.
Yeah, my point was simply that you're not suggesting that's the long-term solution. You're just saying Kelly Oubre is a better fit at that spot with Devin Booker on the floor from a defensive perspective than T.J. Warren.
I think
right.
I'm defending you, Dave, is what I'm saying.
Dessert has earned that starting spot. Why, Dave, would you not replace him with Mikal Bridges?
I just am a big fan of Mikal Bridges and what he brings. He doesn't need to be the primary guy. He doesn't need to touch the ball to stay engaged all game long. He is their most reliable defender. He's the one that they put on the opposing point guards. Yeah, you could put Kelly Oubre there too, but a lot of teams have like more than one dude who can score on their perimeter. And so it'd be nice to be able to put Bridges on one and Oubre on the other and trade them off, because they would defend slightly differently. They would have slightly different strengths and being a defender. And Mikal Bridges doesn't yet know how to defend over 40 minutes as well as he can defend over 10 minutes. And so because the offense of the other team's best offensive player figures out how to counter the way he's being defended is what I'm saying. So it'd be easier to do some trading off in that. And that's why the Suns do a little bit better in the middle two quarters and the beginning of the fourth than they do in the first quarter and the end of the fourth, because they become more predictable on the offensive end as well as the defensive end. So if you put Oubre in there with Bridges, they become less predictable there.
If you were the Suns GM heading into this offseason and you could keep one of two players, assuming the money is the same, between Rashawn Holmes and Kelly Oubre, who would you keep?
Oh, Kelly Oubre in 5 seconds. I wouldn't even think about it.
Really?
I can find a Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah. There's other Rashawn Holmeses out there. In fact, we had the guy. His name was Eric Moreland. I mean, really, I don't want to denigrate Rashawn Holmes because he's done an excellent job. But I think an Eric Moreland could bring 90% of what Rashawn Holmes brings. And the only reason he didn't play was because neither Holmes nor Aiden got hurt or started playing really badly and needed to be benched. So whereas a Quincy Acey coming in place of Eric Moreland plays a different position. He's a little bit more burly and can play the perimeter. So I really think Rashawn Holmes is more replaceable than a Kelly Oubre. I would keep Kelly Oubre.
Well, and I look at it, okay, who's more likely to start? If money's even, right, who's more likely to start and have an impact? And I think a larger impact, and it's Kelly Oubre, because you've got DeAndre Ayton. Rashawn Holmes isn't going to be your starter. He's not going to get on the floor and play that. But Kelly Oubre could wind up being a starter in your future lineup, depending on how Josh Jackson develops or what you decide to do with him or T.J. Warren long term. Rashawn Holmes is a nice backup to have, but Kelly Oubre could have a major impact in major minutes.
Now, I don't think they're ever going to get the same money, though.
Right.
So I could be surprised this summer. They won't get the same money. I think Holmes will get way under 10 a year, and Oubre will get in the 15 range from someone a year. And at that point, it becomes a harder decision. But so, your original summation was, what if they were for the same money?
Right.
I would keep Kelly.
I think even at 15 million, you got to consider Kelly Oubre, because what it does is it frees up your
that's
to
what
make
I'm saying,
other moves.
Is it becomes a much harder decision if it's a 15 million. If they're both around 10, then I'd keep Kelly. If Kelly is suddenly at the 15 and Holmes stays around the 10 or less, then I'd be more likely to keep a Rashawn. Although I wouldn't be a fan of either of those guys at that kind of money. I'd rather you wait it out until late July and get one of them for a lot less.
So let's say you are the Suns GM. You're going to this offseason with roughly $30 million in cap space, and it will cost you about $25 million of that cap space, so about 90% of it, to keep both of those players, but you would be coming back next season with roughly the same team having to bet on internal development. Would you be willing do that with your...
The Dark Knight, you know, the scene where the Joker's standing on top of the pile of money and he pours gasoline on it and he lights it. I'd rather they do that. You cannot come back with the same team.
What's awesome, though, Tim, is I get totally what you're saying. And yes, if they spend all their cap space on their own restricted free agents, then it's a whole waste of a summer for sure. I totally understand, and I agree.
That's not. I wasn't saying it's a waste. That was more of a question. I'm not sure. They're
okay. With, I think it's a waste.
Okay.
If you did that, it's certainly something they could do, and I think it's a waste. The good thing, the lucky thing about that is they're restricted free agents, meaning you can spend your $30 million first, and then re-sign one or both of them after and exceed the cap. It's totally
Rashawn
okay.
Rashawn Holmes isn't restricted. Rashawn Holmes is just a free agent. I don't think he's restricted.
I think there's something like the early bird or whatever, but well, okay. So, but Kelly is definitely restricted. So you could wait until after you spend at least then your other $20 million on somebody else, spend 10 or whatever it is to keep Rashawn if you wanted to keep Rashawn, and then sign Kelly afterwards.
Well, they won't be able to do that if the league institutes our 20-minute rule to match, like we talked about last week.
God,
so.
That would be awesome.
you just can't spend your whole cap on guys you already have here in a situation where you're going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA this year. Again, like, you're not going to see that growth, that success. You know, I don't mind overspending a little bit for Kelly Oubre, because then it frees up. You could trade TJ Warren. You could trade Josh Jackson. So there's other ways to improve your roster that doesn't have to be direct cap space. But man, if that's the major moves they make this offseason, it's going to be another long year here on the solar panel.
Oh, we've gotten into the point of the season where, you know, I watch every Suns game. The ones where they're down by like 20 after the first quarter, I start to really debate whether or not I want to spend my evening.
Same here.
Finishing watching that.
And you know what? That proved would have been a smart decision to stop watching them against the Pacers.
Which I did.
But it would have been a bad decision to stop watching them against the Raptors. So now that's the problem, is they keep drawing you in.
Right. They keep having that too little, too late comeback. You know,
but at least it's fun to watch that little late comeback.
It is. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of the time, honestly, the only reason why I'm finishing these games at this point is because of the pod. If it weren't for the pod, I'd say, you know what? I got a 3-year-old. I can go play with him. I can go hang out with my fiance. There's other things I could be doing with my life than watching this shithole fucking team. They got to do something next year. I cannot take this.
Tim, you should probably do that anyways. It's not, this pod is not worth neglecting a 3-year-old.
Oh, I'm not neglecting him. Okay, let's make that clear. There's no neglection of Kingsley.
Actually, the fiance is probably like, you know what? It's better, Tim. You go do whatever you want.
Well, for you, the Suns games are on pretty late, so your kids are already asleep.
Yeah, it depends. Those East Coast road games are road trips are really nice for me.
Yeah, that's where you've got to decide whether you're going to spend the time with the 3-year-old or not. Mm-hmm. The other time is, should I spend the time resting before my 3-year-old wakes up?
Right.
Yeah. I'm just impressed you guys actually watch these games. So
sure, you watch them too. I'd still watch them anyway, but I did tweet the other night. I'm like, why am I watching this when they were down to the Pacers? And I just didn't feel like there was going to be any energy in that game. But I've been fooled before. I mean, they came back. They were down almost 20 in the Kings. They were down almost 20 against the Raptors, and they came back both times.
The Pacers just looked – Pacers looked great. The Suns just looked off in that Pacers game. There was something about it.
The Pacers knocked them off in the first 5 minutes. I mean, the Suns had 10 turnovers in the first quarter alone, with most of those being in the first 5 minutes, because the Suns came in a little bit tentative on their passes, and the Pacers came in really dialed in, kind of like the Suns did against the Nuggets a week and a half ago. So it actually was about a week ago. So it just depends on, and the Suns don't get off the mat as quickly as they otherwise should, probably because they're so young. The game is mental as much as it is physical.
Yeah.
It's a damn headband that Devin Booker was wearing.
I hate that headband. Please, can we have the take the headband off campaign, please? Because that makes me think of old Jared Dudley. Nothing bad against Jared Dudley, but it makes me think of old man Jared Dudley, and that is not a good player to be comparing Devin Booker to.
Tim, I assume it was you that sent the screenshot from the Twitter account of the Chiron on the lower third on the game the other night. It was showing Devin Booker pregame, and it said, "Will wear headband," as if that's really we're at the point where headband watch is the most important thing on the season. Is how fashionable will Devin Booker be on the court tonight?
That headband is terrible. It's like he went to ninja school and he put on the ninja headband, you know, for doing his jujitsu stuff.
Hold on, do you mean karate? Like, is there a ninja school I'm unaware of where you get headbands?
You don't go to throwing star school?
I haven't been to ninja school.
Marley's. You'll know I'm coming.
I graduated from ninja school and got a headband.
My still this season, my favorite TV moment for the Suns is when the NBA decides to show the top or the standings in the Western Conference and just list teams 1 through 14.
There's no point listing the Suns
anymore. Like, they just decided the Suns don't exist.
So so luckily the lottery odds are a little flatter this year, and it doesn't matter as much being fifth versus second.
Right. They're guaranteed a top five pick right now.
Right, right. But if you look at the latest playoff probabilities, like on a Basketball Reference or something like that, the Suns are actually picked to be the fifth worst team in the league, even though they're the worst in the West, because there are four teams that are worse than the Suns in the East.
I'll never forget when the year that they wound up drafting Alex Len. I'm at NBA at the draft lottery.
I'll never forget that either, man. Jeez.
Lon Babby is the representative in the room, and they fall, right? They fall from, I think it was four. They were supposed to be four. They fall down to five. And I just remember him after the fact just touting that, hey, we're still the highest. We have the best pick of any Western Conference team. The other four are Eastern Conference teams. Like somehow that was a consolation that I felt better that and the media that was there would feel better about the Suns situation because, well, we still have the best pick of any Western Conference.
Lon always tried to find that silver lining.
I loved Lon, but that always stuck out in my head. Anytime I hear what you just brought up, oh, well, you know, they will have the best pick of any Western Conference team. Okay, great. There's still four teams that'll be ahead of them, and you'll get the fifth best player, but all right.
Well, they aren't keeping that pick anyway, unless it is, to your point, Zion protected.
Yeah, well, we talked for a few minutes last week, and I got some constructive criticism on Twitter. We'll call it that, because that's how Twitter is, right? It's full of constructive criticism.
Yes, that's what it is, constructive, yes.
I got constructive criticism on my take. Actually, Greg, you were included too, but you didn't engage in this conversation about how we said that NBA front offices do not need scouts anymore.
That's not what we said.
I know it's not. So I tried to clarify that, but you know, it's like talking to a wall, right? The take was the same no matter how I tried to restate it. What I meant, what I was talking about was in the particular case of the Phoenix Suns with the GM, James Jones, who knows that he's tired of draft picks taking years to develop and he wants to develop an NBA level roster. So you're not the worst team in the league again next year. You likely need to have veterans and not rookies again. So if they're going to pick, it's going to be one of the guys that is unequivocally you can't pass on, like a Zion Williamson, or they're going to trade that pick. And you don't need a draft scout to trade your top five pick. And they're not going to have any other picks in the draft. I'd be very, very surprised if they take that second, if they use that second round pick and they haven't traded it by then. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, and I think your point too, and I think we both said this was, if you're in a top 3-4 pick and it's not necessarily foreign talent in there, there are so many ways to watch it that and that the consensus picks usually it wouldn't be too hard to make that draft. We weren't saying forget scouts, cut them out of the game, you don't need them at all, and we're just saying in this particular situation we kind of get why that James Jones hasn't hired those scouts, and that literally it seems like it's Zion Williamson or nobody, and you don't need a scout to know Zion Williamson is going to be good in this game.
That's the thing. It's not a linear thing. It's not the more scouts you have, the more likely you are to take the right guy. All it takes is one good scout to identify the right player, and you can get the draft right. It's not linear is all I'm saying. It's not like a team with 10 scouts is going to have more draft success than a team with one scout. You just have to have the right scouts. I don't think the Suns have the right scouts in place. I really don't. The only guys with scout at the end of their name on their roster have been there for 15 years and they were never lead scouts. So I'm not saying the Suns have the right scouting in their front office. And if, God forbid, for somehow they end up with a 13th pick in the first round, it's going to be NBADraft.net or Draft Express or ESPN that that's the draft board they're going to use to pick the guy. And that may or may not be great. But it's not going to be tons worse than 20 guys who scoured the globe for the last 15 years and still came up with just about the same list.
I'm pretty sure Lance Blanks, and I'm not joking, had like 71 people on his staff, not all scouts, but a large, large staff, and he sucked. So
right. It's about who does the picking and which scout, you know, what scouts you have, are they talented? So we'll see how this draft works out, but all I'm saying is that the Suns front office has shifted from draft, everything else, second to draft being kind of last on their list.
Right.
Well, and the reality is James Jones might not even be the GM at that point. I mean, if they decide to hire outside the organization, which I doubt they will, but if they do, you could have a new GM that comes in 2 or 3 weeks before the draft.
Oh, good.
So, like, it might not matter. Like, he has his own guys. He has his own thoughts. It wouldn't matter who this interim scouting staff was either.
So, on that note, a couple of things wrap up. If you want to become a supporter of the podcast, open up the show notes right now while you're listening to it. Hit the Become a Supporter button. And thank you so much again to Joseph for being our supporter of the week there. The second thing is, if you want to meet us at Marley's prior to the game on Tuesday against the Minnesota Timberwolves, the three of us will be there having a beer. So come and say hello.
You just got done listening to The Solar Panel. For more great Suns content, check out the Timeline podcast for stuff like this.
There's no way that Hakeem Olajuwon makes his own pancakes. I'm really sorry that you just made a great coherent point and that's all I had to respond with, but all it did was lead me to look up the fact that Hakeem Olajuwon made $110 million in his NBA career, and God knows how much since then. He easily has someone at his ranch to make his pancakes, right?
That's The Timeline, a Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.